been weird, like not having band practice, which kind of sucked, but at the same time, it gave me time to like spend more time with my gear and do, you know, other musical projects that I've been meaning to get to for a long time.
Yeah.
That I hadn't been able to get to with, you know, playing shows with the band or, you know, rehearsal schedules and, you know, all the other bullshit that comes with it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's been, it, you know, as they say, every blessing is a curse.
Right.
The other way around. So it's been good, but it's also sucked.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we've been experiencing the same thing. It's been one of those deals where it's just been kind of a roller coaster. I had a studio in downtown Houston that I got out of. Like, actually, my lease was ending, and then I was going to expand into another whole other, like, I was going to rent out a whole house and turn it into a recording studio and all kinds of stuff, and then bailed at least on the actual physical idea of it for right now, and this was months ago, and I'm glad that I did, because I'd be up the creek at the moment.
I mean, the guy that recorded us, like, he's struggling. Like, just now in Denver, it's the last couple of weeks, they've really started to kind of open it up. Now that they have, you know, our cases are starting to spike, too. So I assume that we're going to have to lay low again. But, I mean, he's struggling. You know, like, he was locked down. He couldn't do anything. And, you know, he relies on people being in the studio to make a living. Like, that is his living. And he's not been able to do anything. I mean, he's been, like, offering to mix people's garage band projects and stuff just for, you know, a little bit of money here and there.
Absolutely.
I hope he survives it. I mean, honestly, like, that's the dude I want to record with. He did a great job.
Where did y'all record?
So it's a little place in Aurora called Module Overload. And it's a guy, like, his specialty is, like, stoner music. Like, that's what he likes. That's what his ear's tuned to.
Yeah.
Better than anything else. Like, he'll do anything. Like, he's done rap projects and, you know, anything. But I think that he's more geared towards, like, stoner, doom, metal type stuff, because that's just what he likes, and he knows how to make those sounds.
Yeah, he knows how to arrange it.
Yeah, he knows how to put it together, and, like, he's got the right mics for it, and, you know, he's a stoner himself. So, I mean, it was the best recording experience I've ever had. I mean, like, it's a small place. The room sounds good. And it's just, you know, he's super chill. Like, anything goes as long as you're getting your work done. I mean, like, he's getting his paycheck at the end of the time, you know, anyway, it doesn't matter how long it takes you.
Right.
But I'm like, you know, we all, like, we brought our own poisons in and just had a good time with it. And it wasn't super stressful, but we also got it done. I mean, we did tracking, took 2 days. It was about 20, I think it was about 22 hours we spent tracking, and then another maybe 6 in the mixing process. And then, you know, he mastered it, you know, at a distance, so we didn't have to go in for that. But I think we got 5 songs out of the 8 done the first day, and it was just exhausting. I wanted the first track to be done with my Les Paul, and the Les Paul weighs like 12 pounds, and I wore a Les Paul for 11 hours.
Oh, good Lord.
My shoulders have still, I actually sold it after we got done with the recording. I never wanted to hold that guitar again. It hurt me bad.
That's too bad.
So I got rid of that. But it, you know, it was a good experience, I guess. I had fun, other than, you know, the back pain that came along with it. The second day of recording, I used my SG, and my SG is incredibly light.
Yeah. It's weird. Yeah. I have an SG and a Les Paul also. And it's like, it's weird. It's like when I first got my SG in, I was just like, is this right? Is there something wrong?
Something's missing.
Yeah.
Like the fact that the headstock, like the neck, weighs more than the body is weird.
Yeah.
Because they'll dive. On
yeah.
That.
That's how I know.
That's why they're broken ones.
It's super weird. And
you always have to have your hand on the neck, always. Yeah. SG.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know. I've gotten, you know, I'm always getting guitars and trading and selling and doing all this stuff too, and so, and, you know, and have different setups and string gauges and all that, you know. And it's like, oh, well, this one has a Floyd Rose, but this one has 13s on it, you know. And I'm like,
I planned the recording stuff out perfectly how I wanted to hear it, like how I wanted the guitars to blend together, and like made sure, like, you know, even used to the point where I used like different fuzz settings on the different guitars to like one was a little bit heavier than the other, and for some reason, when you do one that's heavier than the other and then, like, split them, it sounds way heavier than if you just do a bunch of heavy. And yeah. I'm not real good with the recording process, but, the you know, Jamie, the guy that recorded us, like, live, I dime my big muff. It's loud and it's nasty. In the recording studio, it was sitting on, like, 9 o'clock. And it was like, I've never used a buzz on that low of a setting, but on the other end of it, the way that it, you know, the mics pick it up and it gets spit out the other end, it was way heavier than having it dime.
Yeah. Well, it sonically, it makes it to where you can kind of like get the full potential out of the frequencies that you're hitting with that instrument.
Right. Yeah.
On a super geeky level.
Like just such a low buzz setting and it's still being so heavy on the other end of it.
And then also, well, and that's why, too, it's like a lot of bands like Windhand comes to mind, you know, to where it's like you can hear the bass, but and then you can also hear some, like, guitar undertones, but then all of a sudden they'll, like, cut in with that wah, you know, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, okay, so then when you layer all that, it like you were saying, it, like, expands the sound instead of...
Yeah, and it's weird. Like, a lot of people don't listen to music the same way that people who really love music listen to music. Like, for a lot of people, it's one total thing. It's a wall of noise. Like, it hits them, like, full frontal. For me, when I listen to it, I can hear each individual thing and then appreciate how they sit on top of each other and interact and play. Because, like, in different parts of the song, they'll switch up and one seems to be the focus more than the other.
Yeah.
And it's just, that makes music incredible.
Yeah.
Like really listening to it and you know, appreciating how the individual musicians worked around each other to, like, create something that has all these ups and downs. Like, even if it's just all out fuzz the whole time, there are still ups and downs in it. Like, the way, you know, the bass is present more, or, you know, they kick the wall on and, like, you go on this, like, wild, like, swooshy journey all of a sudden. Like, it's that's a lot of fun. Or, like, what is that one Monolord song? I can't think of it, but anyway, in that particular song, you cannot tell the difference between the bass and the guitar.
Oh, well, geez. Well, with Monolord, it's a little hard to split that up at times.
Everything is so heavy, and, like, when it kicks out, and it's just, like, it's either the bass or the guitar, and I've never been able to figure out which one it is.
Yeah.
But it's so heavy.
Yeah.
They were really fun to see live.
Yes, they are fun to see live.
They were really good. I got to see them at High Dive here, which was, you know, relatively small club, so it was real tight. I mean, it was sold out. And I always like having the experience of being, you know, shoulder to shoulder, pushed in on the stage and enjoying a band, which we may never get to experience that again.
I know. Yeah, that's crazy.
That's weird. Like, I was thinking about it the other day with my son. Like, I've gotten to take him. He's seen, he saw Earthless. He's seen Yob, and he's seen Acid King, which was his favorite. And like I'm glad that he got to experience like that whole thing before all of this happened.
Yeah.
Because like that stuff, like going to shows is what saved me as a kid. You know, if I hadn't had music and going to shows, there's no telling where I would have ended up. Like that was my saving grace, was getting out, you know, almost every night. Like in my teenage years, God, there was a show every night where I grew up. I mean, and it's not like that anymore. Like the all ages scene is not as happening as it was when I was a kid. It doesn't seem like, anyway. There's a place here that really tries, but it's just kids don't go to shows anymore. It's weird. It seems like all the people that go to shows are the people that grew up going to shows when they were a kid, and now the youth is just not like super into that. And,
yeah, there are a couple of venues here that push all ages shows, and I would agree. You know, the bigger shows, I actually see a lot of parents bringing their kids.
And that's amazing. I love seeing, you know, because when we went to see Earthless, he was the only kid there.
Yeah,
like the only kid, and like I could see like people looking and being like, "This is awesome that he brought his kid to the show." Like he's sharing it. Like that's dope. But you just don't really see a whole lot of it anymore. Kids just aren't into it that much.
Yeah.
I don't know what they were into. Video games, I guess? I don't know.
Video games. Yes.
Like, because I've got a 10-year-old, and, like, he plays video games, but he also, like, he's a lot like me. He likes to get out and just be outside.
Yeah.
And just, you know, enjoy it. And, like, he likes going to shows, which, you know, again, it's weird to think about. I'm having a hard time wrapping my mind around how different everything is on the other side of this pandemic. Like social distancing, like people trying to have shows and still be 6 feet away from each other. And I don't like that idea. I don't like that idea of it at all.
Yeah, no, it's definitely an uncomfortable idea. We have a 12-year-old on this end, and he's super into metal. He got into Amon Amarth like very early on, and he listens to a little bit of everything, man. I mean, he loves Guns N' Roses, and he also loves Primus, and yeah.
That's good. Like, you're doing it right. Letting them explore and find their own things. Like mine, like he likes probably his favorite band is Queen, actually. Like, he's really into Queen, but he also likes Acid King, and he listens to a lot of I guess I don't really know what to call it. I guess it's like DJ stuff, like a dude named Marshmello. Like, he's really into stuff like that. He's spread out wide in his musical tastes, and I love that about him because I'm not as wide. I do like a lot of stuff, but my musical tastes are not as wide as his, and I'm a little jealous.
Yeah, we went to Slayer last year, and he went to Primus. We saw Ozzy when he was on his farewell tour, and Zakk Wylde was playing with them too, and that was awesome. And then he was scheduled to go to the Black Keys, but then got sick last minute. But like, that's kind of, you know, it's like Slayer to Black Keys is kind of.
Yeah,
kind of his spectrum, which I'm down with because I listen to all of it too. So
yeah, I mean, I've got mine's pretty wide from like old school honky tonk to the far ends of metal and everything in between. I just have like electronic music was something that I've just never been able to like super get into. Like, I appreciate it. Like, I understand the what's involved in doing it, and I can appreciate them as musicians. It just never just doesn't hit my ears right.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat with that. It's a little rough.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It just doesn't hit my ears the way that I guess it hits other people's ears.
I think it's the difference of something that is literally synthetic that's hitting your ears compared to something that is going through a whole lot of other things, right.
Well, I mean, like, a guitar is a very organic thing because there's a human being playing the guitar, and not every note is going to be the same intensity the way it is with like playing electronics.
Yeah.
Like, when you hit that button on the electronics, like, it's going to be the same every single time you hit it.
Right.
With a guitar, guitarists, like, we suck. We flub up all the time, and that gives it a little bit of character.
Well, I mean, that kind of brings it back to pop music, even, to where it's like there are a lot of, there are a lot of people and a lot of, engineers and stuff that make it to where it's like, oh, we can fix that, Oh, we can bring you back in, to your BPM that you need to hit, or oh, well, we can auto-tune that. And it's like, no, yeah.
Slick.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, I would much rather hear a band play live as a recording as well than I would have everything just absolutely perfected, because then it winds up sounding flat.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't come across as well because it's everything is just so leveled out and even and perfect, and there's no mistakes. And I think that takes a lot of the life out of it for me. Like, I like to see, like, I like bands that get up there and they don't sound as good as the record. Like, I want to hear the humanness to it.
Right.
I think that's what makes it interesting to me, is watching people get up there and spill their guts out on the stage, whether it's good or not.
Yeah.
I grew up in the punk scene. Every band sucked then.
Yeah.
But it was still fun.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I can totally relate to all that. Yeah, and actually I was to talk about the record for a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was definitely hearing some punk influences in it, to where it's like, the record as a whole, I'm just like, man, from the album cover to listening to the whole thing, like right off the bat, like when you see the album cover and you have Odin with this Norman Crusader like coming in and stuff, I'm just like, okay, this is obviously going to be something that I will listen to, you know, and then once I listened to it and then delved into the lyrics and stuff, I'm just like, man, it's like, golly, it's like, it's political. It's, you know, you got occult stuff, you got stuff about, you know, religion and like I was saying, the Odin iconography on the album cover and stuff. And it's just like, you pack a whole lot into the album, yeah, which is very cool.
One of the things that we often kind of joke about is that as a band, we're very confusing for people. we cover a lot of there's a lot of genres mixed in there, because there is punk in there. There is, you know, like stoner stuff. There's blues. There's my southern rock upbringing. I mean, listen to some of the solos. Like, I'm riding that pentatonic scale and bending the fuck out of it. That's that's southern rock as hell, and I can't not do it. Like, it's all in there, and, you know, like, once, you know, we do some, like, cool, like, groovy, like, stoner jams, and then, you know, kick you in the face with something, like, super heavy. Like, and it's, some people don't know how to take that. They think that they're, you know, they're going to see a doom band or whatever, and they think they're going to get, like, Monolord, which I love Monolord, but they're kind of samey. Like, all their songs are, like, the same tempo. Like, they're, like, it's the same. You're just getting blasted in the face with, like, this doomy heaviness, and that's awesome. I love the shit out of that. But I can't write like that. Like, I have so many influences, and it's, I'm just all over the place. And, like, that, some people don't know how to handle that at all. And, like, we have people that absolutely love the fact that we're not pigeonholed into, like, one category. We also have people that walk away and they're like, what the fuck was that? Like, are they a punk band? Are they playing metal? Is it stoner? Is it, I don't know. I don't know what I'm hearing. And they don't know if they like it or not. And at first I think that was really off-putting for some people. But I think that, like, we found our groove and found a way to adjust our set list to where, we were getting maximum approval from the audience at a certain point, and, like, really, like, it got to the point where I felt like we were having to win them over. And when you have to do that, it just makes you better. It doesn't make you any worse. Like, when you get up there and you try hard each and every time to win over every person in the room, you're better the next time you do it. It's you know, it's kind of like working out or practicing your instrument. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, we played a lot at the very beginning, like a lot, like 2, 3, 4, sometimes 4 times a month. And, like, I just considered them like rehearsals. You know, we were playing for rooms of, like, 2 or 3 people, and, you know, that's a rehearsal that, you know, you've got extra people. We rehearsed in a bar. We, you know, like, got free drinks and played music. It was dope. And, like, I think that's what made, I think that shaped a lot of the songwriting, like, trying to, like, win over everybody, and the fact that we did, like, so much playing, like, and got to really explore some of those songs and kind of work within, you know, the framework of those songs and make them better by playing them in front of people. You know, if you go and you listen to Leave Something Witchy, for example, on the first EP, and then listen to it on the album, it's wildly different. Like, it's the same song, but you can tell that, like, it's got way more life to it, that we played it a lot and really, like, found our groove. That was the only song in the album that we did in a single take. Like, we were like, fuck it, let's throw Witchy on the album, let's do it. And it was like 1, 2, 3, 4, boom, and we were done. Like, that was it. Like, we had finally, like, perfected that.
With a lot of the others,
some of that stuff was really, really new. Crusader, for example, the last song on the record, we had just finished writing it, like, 2 weeks before we went into the studio. And usually that's not enough time to, like, really, like, make sure that it's set in stone. Like, that's the way we were going to do it. Like, that whole end section, like, where it goes into, like, the wall, like, the wall of guitars and wah and fuzz, like, that was all just bullshit. Like, I bullshitted every bit of that because there really was no ending to that song. There was a live version of it, and then there's the recorded version of it that fades out. The live version I didn't think was near as impactful, because it's really hard to make that much noise at the end. I think we nailed it. Like, that one was brand new. God of the Gallows was relatively new. We hadn't really played that one out much. Witchy was the oldest of the group, so that one was nothing. Blood Moon took a long time. just because there's a lot of not really time signature changes, but the tempo picks up a lot in some of those songs. And the drummer being a perfectionist the way he is, like, we had to, like, split some of that stuff up and do sections at a time. And then, you know, they get, gets tiresome playing some of those songs in the studio. But, man, it was fun. It was a good experience. It was the best recording experience I've had. And I was, my expectations were far beyond met on the other, you know, coming out the other end of it. It's awesome. I mean, like, when ours go out, I'm including, I got patches made when we did the EP, and just, we were still really small then, and, you know, I didn't get rid of a lot of them, so I have a ton left. So there'll be a Leave Something Witchy patch in the record. There'll be an Earth Diver guitar pick. There's Earth Diver foil sticker. Like, I'm trying to, like, include a bunch of stuff for all the people that, you know, especially particularly for the people that, took the time and pre-ordered. The people that got the test pressing are actually getting woven patches that have the album cover on it, and they look incredible. I don't know how they managed to weave a patch that, like, actually captures, you know, most of the detail of the album cover. That's, you know, and it's just like a 4x4 patch, square patch. It's incredible.
Yeah.
They did an excellent job. And I was talking about this with somebody else recently. I think that with shows kind of, you know, out for a while, at least for a while, it's going to be really important for bands to stay relevant in producing music.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the only way you're going to be able to stay relevant. I think that you're going to see a lot of bands that are just going to, like, try to hit the studio as soon as possible and just get albums out since they can't play. Because that's the only, like, that is really the only way to, like, keep up.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you can't play shows, you can't tour on the album, so you're not really, you know, doing that, winning over new people that way. Everybody's going to have to be a studio band. Everybody's going to have to be the Beatles for a while and just, like, do studio stuff. And I think that's going to really actually create a lot of really, really good music.